Hello! Appropriate salutations to everybody out there. This is the Colonel, and I have with me Peachy.
You do.
And strangely enough, you're listening to Peach and the Colonel for another episode of our podcast. We've had a few fantastic guests of late, and not because we don't like guests, but just to get back to the root of what we do, we just thought we'd have a chat.
Yeah, have a little bit of a yak today and see what comes out, really.
Have a yarn.
Yeah.
It's been fascinating. We'll go a bit meta here for a second. It's been really interesting doing this podcast and talking to people from very varied spaces in life, you know. Mm. You really learn a lot just hearing, you know, how people, you know, I've been, amongst other things, an artist and listening to different people's artistic processes.
Yeah.
They're all so different.
Yeah. And I think coming into this, I guess I knew that it would be a learning process because you're listening to other people's perspectives on things, but I don't think it's nice. You can almost feel your brain widening.
Mm.
You know, it's like that thing. We were just chatting before off air about sort of friendships and the different friendships you have, and ones where you feel like when you're with certain people, you feel like you're going to meet others and you're open to the world. And I certainly feel that I have that friendship with you. It's excellent. It's excellent, Colonel.
Well, isn't
it good.
Lucky that we're stuck here in the studio?
Oh, it's great. Exactly. Not going to meet anyone.
That's an interesting thing I've always thought about relationships is there's a natural balance in the universe with absolutely everything.
Mm.
And in a relationship, you know, you sort of, I don't know, especially close relationships, you tend to be pushed into a role, like someone has to be the responsible one, someone's the ridiculous one, and you just, the fact that you're in a relationship sort of defines that. You become sort of fire and ice in lots of ways.
Yeah.
I know, for example, I'm usually the idiot.
I wonder who would be fire and who would be ice here then. It's an interesting thing. I'd define myself as fiery normally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's interesting. I mean, something like travelling together, you realise who's...
It's a good test, isn't it?
Who's the one mitigating risks and who's the one taking them.
Mm.
And for me, I was always the class, you know, I was very much a class clown looking to make something exciting, but then when I travelled with my brother, all of a sudden I was like, whoa, no, this situation needs somebody to, you know.
Yeah, and you do straddle both roles, I think, depending on which role the other person's taking. Mm. Yeah, you do, you can slip in and out of that, and the closest relationships probably allow you to do that. That's probably, you know, like as you say, with your brother or with somebody you've known for a long time, you can sort of, whereas with particularly new friendships, particularly if you're navigating travel together, you can often find that first point where you need to swap sides quite difficult. It can be quite traumatic.
I think you're right. And I think that ability to switch between roles is, I don't know, like I always thought the ability to change within a relationship is the thing that's going to make a relationship last.
Mm, like absolutely.
It's the only thing common to all forms of life is the fact that they constantly change and, I mean, inevitably die. So in any relationship, it's the same thing. You've just got to, allow people space to go through their fads and have other friends and have other activities that don't involve you.
Mm.
I think that's important. And we've sort of come in and out, I mean, at various times of our relationship, you know, like there's been times of our lives when I threw tennis balls at the back of your head.
Yeah, true.
You know, you let me change, you let me go through that period.
Yeah.
I haven't done that in ages.
Thank fucking God for that.
Maybe that's why you're here. Maybe that's why you're here.
Oh, dear. Just as a side note, don't bring that tradition back again.
I didn't like
it at the time when I was 5, and I don't think I'm going to like it later at 35.
Yeah. Something we were talking about the other day, that thing of when you're in that situation, when essentially for me, I was a bully. I just didn't kind of realise it at the time. I just thought that's what people did for fun. And it's funny when you sort of come to realise a lot of the things that you do just because everyone else was doing them. And then you realize, oh, no, I'm actually accountable. I'm responsible for those things I did.
Yeah. But it's also very interesting because it is true. Oh, I'm not right. No. It is true what they sort of say about bullies often reenacting, like behaviours that they've either been on the receiving end of where they've been bullied themselves or reenacting, like behaviours that they've grown up with that they think are just normal, you know.
Yeah.
We're often told as teachers that we need to really look out for, particularly with very young children, you know, like kinder age children, you have to look out for strange adult behaviours in very little people because it can be the best indicator of abuse.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so I think it is true, and I see that often where I think with young people who are bullies, I think, I can see that that this is all front to protect you.
Yeah.
You know, this is pure front. Yeah.
Sort of, look, it makes me hark back to something we talked about in a previous episode about words and the power of words and, you know, the damaging power of certain words.
Mm.
And, yeah, I mean, it's a sign of the times that I go away and think, oh, I hope I wasn't triggering someone, or I hope I wasn't, you know, I certainly don't have any intent to harm anyone else, and I don't want to make it out like I think everyone should walk around calling each other nasty words. But what I will say is when it comes to bullying, as someone who has been a bully and has also been bullied a lot, when you deal with bullying, it's not a one-step process. It's not a process where you punish the bullier. Because if you do that for someone's whole schooling life, when they get into the real world and they've been protected from it their whole life, they get into the real world and they realise there's assholes everywhere.
Mm.
And bullying's not right, but teaching people that they'll always be protected from it is just it's
a falsity, isn't it?
It's a falsity.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess what I'm saying about the power of words and things, when someone calls me stupid, like part of the process is to say, hey, stop calling him stupid. That's mean, man. The other part of it is, you know you're not stupid. What does it matter what they say? And taking the power away from it. So it's a two-step process for me, and making people have a bit more resilience and realise that, you know, that they don't have to listen to every arsehole that walks past them in the street. I think it's really important.
I actually think it's probably, I would say that it's more than a two-step process, because I think at the core of it is this, you know, addressing the actual culture from which that bullying's grown from. You know, why is that happening? Wherever you go, you know, why do these assholes feel empowered to be assholes when you're a big grown up? And why, you know, like, how can we engender that mutual respect more sort of more exactingly in schools and thus in the rest of the world, you know, so that it's not a fait accompli that you're just going to constantly be running up against. But then I understand what you're saying, in that you also don't want to set people up with the unrealistic expectation that everyone's going to like them, because that's the default of that too, is that you then end up with that sort of weird weird anxious psychology, which is I just really want everybody to like me, and I will become a doormat to facilitate that.
Or the other side is where you're so caught up in protecting other people that you're jumping down the throat of people when they haven't actually offended anyone. Like when they've said something that had no intent to offend and you jump down their throat, I don't know. It's like you're deliberately getting offended about something that hasn't offended anyone yet.
There's that thing that happened with that I'm just trying to remember her name. I'm sorry, I'm having a complete mental blank, but with the Australian basketball team.
Yep.
Where the girl dressed up in blackface for a party and posted it on Instagram. I think that's a bit different. So, and I think that it's important for us to just make a sort of make it clearly different what we're discussing. Because when we were talking about that, when we were in conversation and we had that chat about language, I think there's a difference between sticks and stones but may break my bones but names will never hurt me versus that language which comes with serious baggage and serious racial and or gender implication.
Yeah, but...
Yeah.
Okay, so I totally agree with that. But does that mean from now until the end of humanity, we have to educate people about every single word that may contain some offence to everybody? Because somebody, for example, some young person... I think
maybe a little bit, because otherwise people...
But aren't you creating problems in that sense?
Oh, I don't know.
Aren't you creating a problem where there was no problem to begin with? Like we don't have certain associations with certain words in Australia, yet America does.
Yeah, but like I don't have certain associations with blackface, but that doesn't mean it's not offensive to a black person.
That's true, but in another community, it's not offensive. Like in another community, it might not be. Is all I'm saying. Like, if you had a situation where black people and white people lived in together in society, there was no problem, and somebody did something like that, should we run over and tell them that they should be offended, and therefore that you can't do that, or is that just cool? Like,
no, but I think the point is that they were offended. And I think, but that's where this gets blurry, isn't it? Like,
that's all I'm trying to say. Yeah, like, if you make this blanket rule that anything that can offend anybody, we should mitigate against that.
Mm.
I just don't, I'm trying to look 10,000 years ahead and think that just doesn't sort of add up to me, because you just end up with this. But then this,
you think about blacklist, a whole, like, hundreds of years in the past and the way, you know, certain people would have been, you know, referenced and or even punished in like medieval times. And we look back on it now and we go, oh, that's so antiquated and terrible that you would put someone in stocks and throw fruit at them or whatever.
Hmm.
Maybe that is true. Maybe that is exactly what us evolving as people is actually understanding that we can put our foot in it and we should avoid putting our foot in it, or we can torture people and we should avoid torturing people.
How many people need to be offended by a word before the rest of humanity stops using that word?
I don't know.
Or does it have to come down to intent? I mean, I know I'm...
I think it is. I think there is a level of semantics here. I think I agree with you in principle that, yeah, we do want to make sure that we don't pathologize words or sayings or people or whatever. But on the flip side of that, I can also see that we do need to phase out language of oppression as a general rule. So I think that's that interesting thing. But I do think...
When's it phased out? When is a bad word phased out? To me, it's phased out when it's no longer offensive anymore, when it no longer carries that, when a faggot goes back to being a bunch of sticks bundled up.
Mm.
Like that to me is when everything's gone back to normal. It's not when we never say the word faggot again because it's got, you know... Over the journey of a word, it might have 50 different meanings with 50 different implications.
Mm.
How do we manage that? I feel
like we need to talk to a linguistics professional here.
Mm.
I feel like there's probably a lot of theory behind how language develops and why it does and, you know, to what extent it is the culture behind it. It's like the culture behind bullying, you know, how maybe it's just a shift in the way the language is used, which allows it to lose its sting.
Mm. There's also a cyclical thing going on. Like, if you look at our parents' generation, the words bugger, shit, bloody, they were highly offensive.
Yep, and
now people...
Now it's on commercial television.
Stop using those bloody swear words. You know, that's okay. I remember that one of the funniest things I ever heard was my grandma giving a commentary of something that happened on the footy show, and she said, "Oh, and then Sam, he called Billy an effing cunt." And the whole table went quiet, and she's like, "What?" Like, I think you censored the wrong word, Nana. I think you can probably say fucking C. I think that'd be any. It's just an example of, you know, things shift.
Yeah.
But things tend to shift to a more liberal. I mean, I can't think of a word that is now a swear word that didn't used to be a swear word.
Yeah.
Oh, but then we just talked about something like faggot.
Yeah.
But
But then that's not within our lifetime, is it? Because faggot's always been offensive in our lifetime. Like, it's an interesting, it must be generational. Mm. So maybe when we're older, we'll be able to say, oh, that's interesting that that word's now become an issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. It's, yeah. I mean.
And I wonder how text speak as well, you know, that sort of crazy thing of putting everything into acronyms and reducing everything, everything to its bare minimum in a, that sort of text speak way. I wonder what that will generate in terms of, I mean, I often hear words from kids in the classroom and I have no idea what they're talking about. Yeah. Now, one of them did use one the other day and I just thought, oh, I'm suddenly so old. I don't know, understand what you're talking about. It was something to do with being a tortoise, that it was like
awkward turtle.
No, it wasn't awkward turtle. That's old school. Mm. Nobody uses that anymore. God, you're so... Come on, Colonel, get with the times. No, this was some sort of, and I said I was a, oh, that's right. This is strange to me. Mm. So your hair, like each strand of hair is a pill and you get your pills chopped when you get a haircut. What is that? And obviously this has not become sort of common language outside of, you know, certain groups of kids. Because the reason it came about was because one of the kids had their phone out and they said, oh, I think that my friend thinks I'm actually chopping pills, as in chopping up drugs. And I said, well, that's what I would have assumed it was too. You know, I don't think that's a strange leap for them to make, because I'm not seeing how hair can be associated as a pill. Is that not... It's one of the strangest things I think I've ever heard.
I don't think I've heard that one before.
Yeah, I get him my pills chopped.
Pills, I'm getting my pills chopped. Don't they use like pills as in your teeth as well?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, maybe it's page. Maybe it's progressed from like teeth to hair, or maybe it's just any. Maybe I could say it if I went to get my nails done. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the internet. I can't see it. It might be like gangster talk or something. There's a few
but it might be like that sort of sad middle class kid gangster talk, sort of like an in-joke thing that hasn't quite, that just isn't funny.
Mm.
But that's the other thing that's interesting about language, the way terms like that can just pop up and be incredibly sort of popular or very current with a group of kids and then just disappear as quickly as it came up and was a thing. It just... reverses again, you know, and you have to wonder if you know, the way language develops is, I mean, the fact that emoticons have now been included in the dictionary is stunning to me, you know, that is kind of mad.
I wonder who, once again, who's the gatekeeper? Like is a winky tongue out in there, but you know, there's so many of them.
Mm.
Do you need to have a nose on your emoticon, or couldn't it just jump straight to your smile? I mean, there's so many variants.
There is.
Someone's got to decide this stuff.
Mm.
Glad
I must say, though, that I really have embraced emoticons. I love using them in my texts. I think they just save me so much time.
Yeah. I like the emoticon. What you said before about text speak, I find is really interesting. Back in the day... there was like the, what was it? What were the phones? Nokia 3310, I think it was. 3310, yeah. That was like a stock phone.
Mm.
But those old phones.
Or was it the 2210? Could have been.
I mean, I had them all, you know, had up to the 60. I had this cool one with a funky iridescent paint job that flicked out and stuff. All cool phones. But because they were quite tactile, I remember being able to drive a manual while I was texting, and you wouldn't ever have to look at the screen because you knew the five always had a bit of a bump on it, so you knew where everything was in relation to it. Now, when you text back then, because if you wanted to type a B, you had to push the 2 key twice, or, you know, an E was the 3 key twice or something, you know, whatever. Because of that, you tended to shorten everything.
Yes.
When the smartphones came along and you had a normal QWERTY keyboard on them, I find that I've reverted back to quite proper English. Like there's certain things I'll shorten, and there's bits of grammar that I'll leave out. But it actually, because it's easier to do it, I've actually reverted back to pretty good English in my text.
And I found, and I find shortenings a bit abrupt. Because of that, I understand what you mean.
As well.
Yeah, so really you've got no excuse. If you want to say Q, you say Q. You don't just put the letter Q. You know, it's sort of,
So I think that's actually reverting back a little bit to how it was.
Yeah, still, but I don't think with kids. Online. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think kids from the texts I receive, which are not very many, but when I do get a, you know, running late to rehearsal or whatever, actually, no. Come to think of it, that is usually proper. It's just occasionally I'll get a strange sort of little winky dink or something that I don't know how to make, you know, that they, you know, that involves a lot of numbers. Or
damn you and your fancy winky dinks.
You know, like a weird, and I think, oh, I don't know what that is. And I just do my very straight, thank you. Back and ask them about it later.
Have you got a go-to emoticon that is you? Like, I know certain people. I know one guy who's who always, it's a winky, always a cheeky wink kind of thing.
It's interesting because I have a lot on my favourites, like on my recently used that I use often. But I wouldn't say I'm defined by an emoticon. I would say I'm more defined by the fact that I always use them. So, but I'm very contextual. In fact,
so you wouldn't just chuck a smiley out, you know, as a "I come in peace" kind of thing.
It'd be, oh yeah,
if you're not happy, you're not getting a smiley.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, if I'm if I'm pissed off, you'll know about it in emoticon language. Totally. Yeah, or you'll get one of those. You know what I find interesting? You know the teethy one that's like all the teeth like clenched together.
Yeah.
In my world, that is an angry person. But a lot of people use that as like super excited about something. And I think that's weird. But isn't it funny? Because apparently they've all got actual real like meanings. But I don't know any of those. I just use them for what I use them for. I've got one friend who always has the little dancing lady.
Oh, yeah.
She signs off with the dancing lady all the time, like, ha ha, flamenco. Yeah. You know, that sort of thing. Exactly.
Paso doble. Paso doble.
Da da.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I went through a period of just trying to sign off with the most random, you know, like the zucchini.
Or
just
dolphin.
Chuck a zucchini in and just keep people guessing.
Did you ever get sort of a response in vegetable? Did you ever get like an eggplant back or something
interesting?
Absolutely,
and some people would be just, you know, bluntly like, what do you mean by that? And that's a text message that you never answer.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you just leave that floating out there. But that's interesting too, because I do think that I mean, that's a whole other area of communication, which is interesting in terms of language use. But because you don't have tone in a text, you do often have to be quite careful. You know, was it, what do you mean by that? Or was it, what do you mean by that? Or, well, you know, there are so many.
And that's why the smiley, like I, generally in life, I always come in peace. And even if I'm saying something really difficult, I'm only saying it because someone needs to hear it. It's kind of, I try and be very diplomatic, and a smiley at the end is just like, just remember, we're all cool here.
We're all
cool. It's just me. I would never be trying to start a fight with you.
Yeah, yeah. This is a well-intentioned message. Yeah.
But I often forget.
But then I think that's slightly passive-aggressive too.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Well, you know, because sometimes, well, that's only because of my experience. Sometimes I've received texts that are definitely picking a fight, and then they have this sort of like ill-perceived, ill-intentioned smiley, which makes me just want to like, I wish there was a middle finger emoticon to write back, like whatever.
There's a smiley poo.
Yeah. The smiley poo is interesting. My boss uses that a lot, and it took me a while to understand when I received that it wasn't actually saying, you know, bullshit or shit in some way, but it was just that it was his favourite emoticon.
Oh, it's just his thing.
It's just what he likes, you know, it's just his little signature.
I always wondered who that was made for.
Exactly.
That's the guy.
Oh, dear. Chris, speaking of sort of, you know, travelling while, you know, in your car, on your Nokia, you know, doing your thing, I have noticed increasingly that there are people who appear to be making whole offices in their car, you know, and perhaps as Melbourne's traffic gets worse and worse, and I must say the other night driving home in a storm when it took me just an epic amount of time to get, ridiculous amount of time to get home, I honestly didn't go above 11 kilometres an hour on my whole way home.
Oh, it's so irritating.
It was ridiculous, so frustrating.
Public transport.
Yeah, I can actually, but that also needs to be addressed, doesn't it, because you just end up feeling like a sardine on a tram most of the time. But if it is interesting that people are making whole, like, sort of worlds in their car, you know, that it becomes this little private bubble in which you can get quite a bit done. So tell me, what do you keep in your car?
That's interesting. I've got an old 1998, 99 Statesman, which is very roomy.
Very big car.
The things that are always in my car, there's always a little pack of, so I do weird diets all the time, so there's always in the glove box, there's like a little thing of nuts just in case I'm caught somewhere that can't cater for me. There's always something I can eat and fall back on.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because I bought them ages, like years ago, and they're still there.
Would you actually want to eat those nuts, or are they sort of like a token gesture now?
I'd check them out.
Right.
Like, they're sealed. So I'd check them out. They've been hidden from extreme heat and light for a long time, so who knows?
Yeah.
I've always got chewing gum.
They could be their own ecosystem by now. Who knows?
It could be. I'm happy to test it.
Yeah, I'm a big chewy fan.
See, I when I get anxious, I chew the meniscus inside my mouth.
Oh, do you? Okay.
And I noticed it, and I just started freaking out thinking about how many times those cells have had to reproduce and repair themselves. I'm like, maybe I'll get mouth cancer if I keep chewing it.
Oh, dear.
So I use gum.
That's a very interesting paranoid thought process, but we'll just leave that behind and continue on. Yes, so you chew gum, yes.
So there's always gum in my car. I think that's important.
What if it gives me mouth cancer? Oh, my God. Hey, life, man, might give us cancer. I know. It is so scary when you start to think of those things.
And
it's,
you know,
like every time I get a headache, do I have a tumour? Yeah. Is this a tumour? I think it's a tumour.
It's, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, I think about stuff.
Clearly, deeply.
chewing gum. I just think it's important.
I also find that chewing gum in the car, now I might be trepping, stepping into strange territory here, but I often find that it's in the car that I discover that I have bad breath. Like post coffee with friends or something, I suddenly go, oh, because I'm in that confined space. I suddenly go, oh, that's that. Oh, that's me.
Yeah.
Or I, like, for instance, this morning, perfect example, get in the car post gym and I'm like, I still smell like last night's garlic prawns. I know I do, because it's coming back at me from the windscreen. Yeah. So I'm going to need that extra, you know. Yeah, do you have a preference with chewing gum, like flavor-wise?
I buy the little bottles. So it's the extra, I think it's the white.
The blue one.
The bottle, yeah. Look, I buy it in bulk. I've always got a pack in my gym bag because same thing. If I go to the gym, I go before shower. I can just get up, get my gym gear on, get out the door. Otherwise, I won't go.
Yep.
So there's always chewy there. There's always chewy in my backpack that I take to work with me so that when I have a coffee and I go back for a meeting or something.
And I'm particularly paranoid about coffee breath as a teacher, because I remember being at school and having to deal with the sort of horrendous halitosis of Nescafe Blend 43 being breathed in my direction. And it is really quite a nightmarish experience as a child.
Yeah, at least go to International Roast.
I think International Roast is the worst one, isn't it?
It probably is.
Yeah. I don't even know.
I don't drink that instant
that instant shit, exactly. It is the instant way to get bad breath. Yeah.
Yeah, I think chewy's. But what I find, though, as a singer, you know, I go and run a choir session But because I'm chewing gum, because I've just had dinner and I've jumped in the car and there's always gum in the car and I don't want to chew my meniscus to get mouth cancer, I always turn up chewing, but there's never a good time because as soon as I arrive, I'm on, you know, I'm in management mode or I'm running the choir or whatever. So there's a certain amount of it where you've just got to, you know.
Get on with it.
So I never get rid of my gum and I do a lot of, I mean, I'll sing for 2 hours with this piece of gum stuck, just stuck in my mouth. As soon as I stop singing, it just comes back into rotation. And it's probably really gross for people to have to watch me sing and see a piece of gum stuck in there.
Yeah. It sounds revolting.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
But it's an interesting, it's kind of an interesting thing. So is your car your office at any point or do you use it as an office?
I hate driving. I love driving. I like, but the idea of it, the idea of wasting, and I do at the moment, I waste a whole probably an hour a day on the roads. It gives me the shits. You can't do anything. Whereas if I catch a train, I've got to put it out there. I never catch a train in peak hour.
Right.
I think that's gross and, that's where you get the no seating and the smelly people and the, you know, the cramped. I try and if I'm making a meeting with someone, I make it at 10 rather than 9 for that very reason, 10:30, 11 o'clock. If I do that, I just have my laptop on my lap as it was designed. And I can get onto the internet, tether my phone, and I can work.
Yeah.
And that time, and in fact for me, catching a train to the city is a lot faster than driving anyway. I've got an express line the whole way.
Yeah.
Very lucky. But it's not dead time, whereas the car, my God, when I'm stuck in traffic and, you know, my phone's beeping, I know I've got emails coming in, whatever, and I can't do anything about it, it just gives me the shits.
You know, I think that's actually where the podcast comes into its own, I must say. Less like, as you say, to be a bit meta for a moment. But I think that's certainly why I started listening to podcasts was because I didn't want to feel like that was wasted time. And I found that audiobooks were a little bit, it was too patchy. I couldn't get into enough of the story in the time I had. Yeah. So, you know, this is a much more contained kind of format and it worked much better for me.
Absolutely.
But it's been – and it's a lovely thing because you can then just stick it into your speakers when you get home and just keep going with the podcast or you can swap over to something else, put your music on, whatever. And it's sort of a fluid, seamless thing from car to home, which I like, especially in the afternoons because sometimes it can be the one thing that engages me, you know.
And the big difference, like – you know, for me, it started with music, but, you know, I do a 6-hour gig singing somewhere. The last thing I want to do is listen to more music.
Yeah.
So it'd be 774, 3LO, Talkback, listening to Mavis from, you know, Glen Waverley calling in to complain about, you know, just the same old shit that they complain about every other night. But that was sort of quite soothing. But then, you know, if you're not that, then it's commercial radio, which is a bit of music, a bit of talking. But there's ads.
I know.
And ads, when you stop listening to ads for a while and you stop watching TV ads for a while, you turn them back on and you're like, do you think people are this stupid?
Yes. Yeah. Like, and do you think people want to spend this much of the airtime listening to this stuff? I know. I would much rather they put on a big long run of ads. It just at the end of the show, you know, rather than
one had watched them, you know.
Yeah, but I don't know. I just watching a movie on commercial television takes so long because of the stupid ads.
I watch parents watch a movie on TV.
Yeah,
and I'm like, you know, you've got the DVD just underneath your telly. You could put that on. But you know, it's on.
Yeah.
I just can't stand it. If I see a good movie on telly that I want to watch, I'll either download it or I'll steal it or I'll get on iTunes and buy it.
Well, I've got that good thing now where I can actually record it.
Fantastic.
So, and then I can just fast forward through the film.
In Japan in 1996 when when I was there last, VCR players, VCR, yeah, VCR players.
You might need to explain those for our listeners. Same with the we've made a few DVD. Really random references. Cassingles now VCRs. Explain a VCR. DVD player with the audio cassette essentially in it.
Yeah, like it's a tape. Video cassette. It's an old analog tape that you'd record things on. In Japan, when you pushed record, it automatically took out the ads. There were markers in the TV shows that told the recorders when to stop and start recording. Now,
how fantastic.
The technology is there. Yeah. It's just illegal. The advertisers, you know, they make sure that we don't have access to that technology, which is really strange. And what's even funnier is it's illegal to record off the TV. Like, you don't have the copyright, you don't have the right, but it's legal to sell a device whose sole purpose is to record stuff off the TV.
Oh.
It's like this, you know, when they talk about music sharing and, you know, this big clampdown on digital. The funny thing is, I remember back in the 80s when our neighbour bought, you know, Whispering Jack, and my mum and dad, you know, went and gave them blank cassette tape and they copied it for us. And that's, people have been doing this since the, I mean, way back in the 70s, way back on 8-tracks. You've had the ability to share music for free for a long time. It's not new. The technology just got better and you could do it quicker. And it's now
more prevalent than ever. Exactly. Yeah. I think it is sad. I mean, I know that you can put a playlist together, but to me it's different. The thing that I think is a little bit sad is the death of the mixtape.
All right. Question for you. Desert Island, same one that you're on with the cheese.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Last time okay. we talked so about it. I'm happily eating my double cream brie. Yes.
That was your final answer?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I'm debating. Or my halloumi or whatever the hell else. Yeah. Oh, anyway. Yeah. We did kind of go with tasty. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you're on the island.
Yep.
You may or may not be eating your cheese of choice. That's not important. That's a separate issue altogether.
You've got there a mixtape. Really sexy man fanning me with a banana leaf?
That's also, it that's could part be, of it. But that's
feeding me the cheese.
That's another episode.
Right.
Yeah, maybe you're feeding him the cheese. I don't know.
That. He's feeding me.
He's feeding you. Cool. This is your island.
It's all about my pleasure.
You've got a mixtape. It's got 5 songs on it, and that is all you're allowed to listen to from now till the end of days. 5 individual songs.
Good Lord. Do they have to be songs or couldn't they just be musical things, musical?
Well, I think by definition that would be a song, Peachy.
No, but what about, like, a symphony, isn't, or a concerto? It's a song. Is that a song?
Yeah.
Do we call that a song?
Yeah, a movement of a concerto is a song.
Oh, okay.
You can't have like the whole ring cycle or...
I can't. It's just the one thing.
But that brings, like, the first thing I think of is, well, I'm going to want some long songs that are not repetitive. I want something that actually has some movements in it.
I think I would probably have, this is very difficult. I think I would have, I'm debating like between, I would want a classical something in there. So I'm debating at the moment between like a Chopin's Etudes, one of those ones, or a little, I do like my Beethoven, but it might be too, but then Moonlight Sonata, it does make me happy and it has all these like resonances for me as a child because my mum used to play it to make me go to sleep. So
that's lovely.
Probably Moonlight Sonata.
Like Peter and the Wolf.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's got heaps of movements gorgeous.
And it's a story.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Lots of
that's
different
lovely.
Instruments and sounds. And
I remember going to the Arts Centre and seeing an orchestra do Peter and the Wolf. And I remember just falling in love with the clarinet, like just thinking how fabulous that was as an instrument. But either that or maybe Elgar's cello concerto. I do love that. If I had to have... I don't think I'd have all 3. Like, I'd just have one of those. Probably Moonlight Sonata. Gee, I'm really debating this, aren't I? It's probably Moonlight Sonata. I'd have to have... I'd have to have my old favourites. So I'd probably have to have some Mads in there. What would I pick if I could only have one Madonna?
Like a Prayer, that goes through some movements.
Mm.
Love is la Bonita.
I think I'd want something more like... dancey sort of, I'd probably go with Vogue. Holiday.
Holiday, okay.
Because I'm on a desert island and I'm eating cheese with a hot guy.
But maybe if you're on a desert island, you don't want to be listening to fucking Kokomo and stuff. You want to be listening to city music.
Maybe you do, yeah, like be really urban. Yeah, it's true. I know, it's hard, isn't it?
I'm going to chuck in a song you might not know. It was from the Beach soundtrack. It's called Eight Ball. It's by Underworld.
How does it go?
I wouldn't even be able to tell you because it's got so many different
Which
movements.
Bits it from? Is it when the with the sharks?
No, it's got
it's just a soundtrack then that's amazing.
It's just very very brooding. Mm. There's some lyrics, but weird lyrics like I saw a man with a flaming eight ball tattooed on his arm. It's just very backgroundy and then it builds and it builds. But as I say, if you turn that song on to different times in the song, you'd think it's a different song.
Oh, so you'd be looking to get the most out of your five songs.
That's
what
I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And something, honestly.
You've thought a lot about this. This is a little bit like the mouth cancer, but more interesting. So The Beach, that's on your list.
It's called Eight Ball by Underworld.
Eight Ball. Actually, that's like quite a good soundtrack. That film's got a really good soundtrack, doesn't it?
What's that All Saints track on it? It's magnificent.
Yeah, I can never remember any of the names of anything, which is probably why I keep going back to the same things.
That every now and then, like, yeah, a band like All Saints that did, I mean, they did some atrocious music. Mm. But every now and then a really bad band does a really, really cool song and you're like, oh, you kind of got to pay it, don't you?
You do, absolutely, yeah. What else would I have? Maybe I would also have something a bit bluesy. So I would probably want some Aretha or somebody on there, you know, just for those times when you just need some Aretha, you know.
Okay, yeah. Pure Shores is the song I'm thinking of.
Pure Shores.
It was, again, from the Beach soundtrack.
It sounds like it's meant to be on a tropical island, which is where the beach is set. So sounds perfect. Good. Yeah. Would you have that one as well? Would you have Pure Shores and the Flaming Eight or just the Flaming Eight?
Eight Ball.
Eight Ball.
You know, I don't know, Peach. Like some songs like that Pure Shores, yeah, I could listen to it a lot, but I don't know if I could listen to it every day forever.
I know.
And I wouldn't want it. Half of my problem with words that have vocals and lyrics is the more I listen to them.
Do you mean songs that have vocals and lyrics?
What did I say?
You said words that have vocals and lyrics.
Songs.
What are we drinking today? This is the Billmore Shiraz, which is clearly having an excellent effect on both of us.
From Chusner in the Barossa. Fantastic. Mm. They also make one called the Ribke by Chusner,
it's very
which is
pleasant.
Magnificent. Mm. Yeah, like, you know, my fiance, we were talking about this last night, and she said, oh, definitely Burn For You by John Farnham. And I'm like, pow, great song.
Yeah.
But do I want to kill it by listening to it every day? Like, you know, I've killed songs by, you know, by overdoing it.
Mm, it's true. And it is easy to do.
Something like November Rain I could do because, once again, it's 11 minutes long. It goes through different
I might have to come back on another episode and like have really thought through this because I'm improvising here, but you've got like a plan.
Look, the important thing isn't what, because we've got all the time in the world to decide.
True.
It's why.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. And that's the thing. If I just go pure nostalgia, then I do end up with like my Moonlight Sonata. I probably have some Jewel,
some
Alanis Morissette.
In,
some Salt and Pepper and some Mads. That's what I'd have because that's the shit that makes me smile. Yeah, maybe some Bon Jovi. Yeah, Bed of Roses.
That's long.
That is long. That is long. And I do like singing to it. But I think actually now that I'm a bit older, I'm moving towards a deeper love of Living on a Prayer because I fucking think it's so true.
It's an amazing song. The only thing that shits me about that song is I can't sing it. It's too high.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just... As much as I love it, it's just a cold, hard reminder that I'll never be Bon Jovi and that upsets me. Mm. But to watch
Can
him
I say
live
I have the same thing with that, Oh, who's the woman who sings the Rolling in the Deep? Adele. I have the same thing. I love her music. And then I went to karaoke and I tried to sing it. And I was like, I can't sing any of this. It was so disappointing.
Funny, I would have thought that would be quite suited to your voice.
Yeah. Well, I was very drunk at the time. So I might just have been screaming a lot of other things before I got to it.
I think the moment you said karaoke kind of implies that to some degree.
Rolling in the Deep is a very long song too. And that could go on my, like, that's quite a, I was surprised. I was like, wow, it's still going.
Burning in my soul.
Have you been to Rice Queen karaoke? Oh, it's not that long at all. I was just drunk. Have you been to Rice Queen karaoke, Chris?
No, where's that one?
So Rice Queen's on Brunswick Street. Yep. It's one of the big restaurants which has had very many incarnations. And Rice Queen is like really yummy, sharing Vietnamese style food / sort of Asian fusion type stuff.
Yep.
Really good, you know, chicken wings in a bucket, that kind of yummy food.
Mm.
And it's fabulous because you can go there and like feast with your friends. And then they've got this little karaoke room out the back that you can have essentially for free if you've eaten there, as long as you've booked it.
It's pretty cool.
It's a pretty cool deal. But the thing about it is because it's not at like a karaoke joint, the soundproofing's terrible. So when we were eating there, we could hear these other people just screaming really badly. And it creates this sort of bizarre ambience, you know, when you're eating. And you know you're going to be the next group in who are going to sound that bad. But when you're in there in the little bubble of the room, you forget that you're going to be heard. It's quite an interesting phenomena.
I tell you, I went out for a boys' night months ago now. We were at the footy, smashed some beers at the footy, and then we all met up and we went out to a bar, and it got to that point of the night where we were all fired up. We had a bloke from out of town, and it was like, boys' night. Yep. And we were thinking,
did you literally beat your tests?
I did just then, but
No, but on your boys' night, is that like a thing?
I couldn't tell you.
I wish I could be a fly on the wall and see if it really happens.
I
couldn't
tell you because I can't remember much. we ended up, we're like, well, let's get serious about this. It's like nine guys, none of us are dressed very well because we've been at the footy. We've all been drinking since like 1 o'clock this afternoon. And
so it was like an afternoon footy match.
Yeah.
Oh,
and this was like 10 at night.
Oh, wow. Okay, right.
We're like, let's be honest about what the realities of this situation are. We're not going to get in many places.
No. But the Japanese will have us.
The karaoke. We're like, but we sat down like, what do we need? We need music. We need loud music. We're going to need loud music. We need drinks. We need lots of drinks.
Yes.
An environment where no one's going to kick out. Like private karaoke room.
Perfect.
So we got a room. We go to K-Box, which is down on La Trobe Street, I think.
Yeah, K-Box is good. It's not cheap. It's not cheap to hire your private room, but it is excellently well serviced.
Yeah.
You can just press your little button, have as many drinks as you like. It's excellent.
Well, you pay for this drinks package, but it runs out so quickly.
Oh.
Maybe.
Well, I imagine at the end of the football day it would run out very quickly.
It's pretty messy. Anyway, great. You know, it was great at the end of the day. I didn't think it'd be the sort of thing a bunch of blokes would get into, but it was quite the opposite. Without girls, it was like people singing Eminem, like dropping rap tunes, and everyone was up dancing, and it was really cool.
Fun. That's really fun. I think karaoke is quite a bonding thing to do, quite a bonding experience. You can go into a karaoke room with people you don't know as well, you know, friends of friends, and you come out and you just, like, you're totally connected because you've all just sung, you know, I don't know, En Vogue together or whatever it might be. That was the other thing that was interesting, was that when we came out of the room and we were all having a last drink and another group went in, it was clear that they were a younger group because we were watching the things they were selecting, and I was thinking, I don't even know some of these songs, you know, like sort of the 90s babies. The things that they select are things that I would not even know, you know. We were talking about S2S not long ago. You know, those kind of people, you know, were getting selected, and I was thinking, oh, I don't know them. So that's interesting. It's interesting when you go with multi-generations to karaoke. That can be tricky. You often end up singing the Beatles then, though. Kind of good.
So, look, in terms of that Desert Island mixtape question, I think that does deserve some further investigation, and I'd like, I think that's something that I don't want people getting flippant and just saying, nah, this is the best song, you should have this song. I'm more interested in why.
Yeah, and if our listeners write on our Facebook page and tell us their five favourites and why, we'd be really interested to find out. Yeah.
Or jump on our podcast companion at peachinthekernel.com where you can get in touch with us as well. But we'd really like, I mean, this is the sort of stuff I think about because the zombies are coming one day.
Back to the zombies. Jesus.
You know, when the internet goes down, when the computers don't work anymore, you know, we're going to need... Some lucky bastard would have kept their Walkman and would have had some cassettes, and they will be the ones laughing. In fact, they're probably the ones that get eaten first because they don't hear the zombie creeping up behind them. But
or maybe they do because they've got such a crappy Walkman that you can hear all of the ambient sounds around them.
Yeah, I can't imagine blocking out any noise is going to be helpful when the apocalypse comes. You want to be with it. You want to be present.
You do. You want to be with it. Hey, also, Colonel, I was thinking about, you know, our very first episode, we were talking about, like, fun things to do with your friends when you're not drunk. And I was just kind of thinking, oh, what are some of the things that we've talked about that we've both enjoyed? Now, this is probably something that maybe you are better off doing drunk or maybe under the influence of something else. But you did talk to me about doing the zombie killing game thing. Oh, can you tell me a little bit more about that?
It was honestly one of the best days I've had in my life. It was a company
you
called...
You were so pumped up. Oh, yeah, amazing. Like it was, yeah.
It was called IRL Shooter, a Melbourne company that developed this awesome, awesome project. They had it in a big old abandoned warehouse out in the burb somewhere. You turned up. We had a team of six of us from memory. We got a full briefing. In fact, when we walked in, the woman said, just to clarify, you, how are you in terms of one being play school language and 10 being, you know, potty mouth, where do you guys sit? And we're like, at fucking 11. And she's like, all right then, you fucking scum, get against the fucking wall and listen up. And from that moment on, it was on. Like, she pushed us around.
Totally immersive.
Like, full military briefing, really angry and like, we don't have time for, you know, we've got a situation here. Everywhere where they shuffled us around to the next area and so well done. Then they put us in proper gear, gave us these replica
M4
guns.
Like in, it was like a sort of like paramilitary kind of outfit that they put you in, or like what did they, what were you wearing? Or was it just vest that you put on?
You got your vests, your helmet.
Right.
Yeah, a bit hazy, but some people went full on and dressed in camo and stuff.
Right.
But once you got in, it was this huge factory and you sort of walked in as a team. They push you through this door and then it was on. There's all these actors. There was like 30, 40 actors all paid as zombies and you had to go through this adventure just trying to get to the end. It was like a computer game but in real life. So your guns had lasers. They could shoot certain things. The technology wasn't great in the first one. And a lot of things had broken, like dickheads had come in the first round and kicked down doors because they were heroes. And so... And in the end, they lost a lot of money because things ran late and they had malfunctions and stuff. The actors were paid so much money,
yeah.
But this thing was so much fun. And some of the actors, like the end guys, you know, there were these super special forces guys that had become zombies. But they'd run at you and you'd shoot them and they'd literally, like, jump in the air and flip over backwards and then just disappear.
Oh,
and
wow.
And you'd run over and they'd just be, you couldn't find any doors.
Oh, cool.
There were things where you'd just be in a room and then a door would lock, a garage door would come down and then there'd be, like, you know, 15, 20 zombies coming at you and you had to fend them off while backing into a hole, crawling through a tunnel.
Wow.
Oh, it was
sounds
so
like it was incredibly detailed. Like,
amazing.
Yeah.
There was one section I remember that was this huge long corridor that had that was just lined with container shells along the side. So every one of those had a door at each end. So you're walking down this corridor and it probably took you 10 or 15 minutes and every time you went past a door, you turn around and there's sounds everywhere, like there's a sound system playing eerie and all in the background you could hear screams and there was a smell, a dankness
about
the place.
Were you with your friends the whole time or were you sort of separated?
No, well, we had one of our mates was a really good army an officer in the army, and he taught us all the proper formations and what we were going to do. He was giving commands.
Wow, how fabulous.
I got a bit of hero complex as soon as I got in. I was like, don't fucking tell me what to do. I'm going to fucking kill zombies. But I've just got to – this thing was amazing. And then they redid it last year, I think, and we signed up instantly. We're like, yep, bang, paid our money. But then just at the last minute – they're having all these problems because the guns that they had made were so realistic that the government wouldn't actually let them have them because they were too realistic. They'd done too much of a good... Like these new guns that they'd made, I got to test them because of my brother's work.
We
and checked out the new gear. They had these guns. They had a proper kick. So when you shot...
Oh, wow.
They had like carbon dioxide cartridges that put in them so it would go...
You have to
eject cartridges, put new ones in. It made lights. It made sounds. And it was... It just felt right.
Mm.
But they got sort of shut down, or they ran out of money because of all this legislation that sort of stopped them. So they sold it on to this American mob who've been doing what they claimed was a very similar thing.
Mm.
And when we got there, it was terrible. Was it the showgrounds?
Oh, so this is not something people can now do. This is like a one-off kind of cool thing.
Yeah, so, I mean, these guys, the IRL shooter guys, had such vision, and one of them was a computer game guy, one was a movie director, and one was something else, like a special effects or something. But
stuntman or something, yeah.
They came from all the right angles to make horror work, to make suspense. Yeah. Like I was talking about that corridor where for 15 minutes you were checking every door, no zombies.
No.
But that's what made it good. You were so jacked up and like...
Yeah, yeah.
And when someone eventually did come out, it was like...
Whereas
the new one was this tiny little contained thing at the showgrounds. It was like just like one of those fake sort of maze things that they put up at the carnival, and you knew every corner you could see where the zombie was going to come out. And and when you got to the end, they were like... No, you forgot to get the such and such. Go through again. You're like, oh, really? You're just going to kill time by making us do the same shit? It was dreadful.
That's pathetic, Chris.
And it was the same cost.
Very disappointing.
Hugely. Yeah. Hugely, especially after the first one.
Was it very expensive?
Look, I think the first one was probably about $120 or something.
Mm.
Second one was about the same and was rubbish.
Mm.
The one that they had planned for the second one was fully interactive, so your guns could shoot lights out in the rooms, or you could, if you shot at certain targets, it would, you know, release gas, or it'd affect the lights and the sound in the room. Oh, okay,
so there was an action-reaction thing. Yeah.
And there were pain belts. So if someone shot you or you came too close to an infected zombie or a bucket of toxic goo or something, as soon as you... the pain belt that was strapped to your chest would start delivering you electric shocks at varying degrees.
I'm not surprised these guys ran into legislation issues.
It was so good. Actually, video. We'll put it up on the thing, a video of me testing the pain belt.
Oh.
Me and my brother shooting each other. And it hurt like hell.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
We dial it up to the highest number because that's what we do.
Sadistic.
But, yeah, that... the idea of doing that and being in, would have been so good. And opening up a whole new, like we talked about the escape rooms, the exhilaration of doing something real and problem solving real situations with your friends.
Yes.
Like fighting zombies with your friends. Like you learn a lot about how people go about.
Yeah. And as you say, like that thing of getting in the room and suddenly having that hero complex and like, I'm going to win, you know, like that really, it's a really intense, like competitive urge that you get.
I realized I'm not a team player when it comes to zombies. I want the glory.
All the glory.
Oh, not just that. I want to kill the zombies to protect my friends. I'm willing to put myself on the line for you, Peach.
Thanks. Excellent.
One day that'll come in handy.
I'm sure it will. While we're sitting here, there might be zombies amassing at the gate. Who knows?
Look, when I did that original IRL shooter, it blew my mind because afterwards I'm thinking, just imagine where entertainment's going to go.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of great stuff happening with augmented reality, virtual reality, all this stuff, but it's not real. There's not that smell and the taste and the touch, and the tactileness. And
that's
what makes the
difference. That's why I'm such a believer in live theatre. You know, yeah. when you all – that's what I love about live dance, for example. I like sitting in the sort of front row and literally their sweat's flicking off them at me. You know, I love that. I love seeing their muscles working. I love – there's something so visceral about the whole thing. And so – and there's that element of risk. You don't know what's going to happen. What if something goes wrong, you know? Or as you say, like that suspense in the corridor, that's that – that's that feeling you really can't get when it's on screen. It's live, you know? Yeah.
Though the front row at dance concerts reminds me of when I was about 19 or 20, my partner at the time did calisthenics, which I didn't even realise existed anymore back in the young Hitler youth army days. But she, I remember going to...
Baton like, twirling.
Yeah, all of that. There's like there's 12 different things they do or something, and they're all just as twee and weird as the last.
Yep.
But I'd go to support, but I'd never buy tickets or anything because, you know, I was just hoping when I turned up it was sold out and I could do something else. But we go to like Ballarat for this big calisthenics at Stedford, and the only tickets left are the front row. So there's all like these, you know, 8 to 12-year-old girls in these ill-fitted leotards
and things. There's oh, like no.
camel toe view.
Way too much information. Ugh. Oh, yucky.
And, you know, and you're this guy on his own, you know, a young guy on his own at a, watching. It was just a bad place to be.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's a bit like finding yourself in a lingerie shop. Yep.
Oh, I've got a great story about that. we have, in my band, we sing a song called "Singing in My Underpants," and at the end of the song, there's a bit of a reveal about what all the guys prefer to wear as their underpants of choice. And one of the guys, we always have this sort of mysterious reveal at the end, like, "What about him? We've heard from everyone else." And in our last counter tenor, Luke, he was just up for it. You know, he's a very funny. Funny guy, and he really took on his role in the group as just, you know, the class clown. So we took him to a lingerie shop in Albany. We're in Western Australia, in Albany. It's a little country town. It's like a little retirement sort of town. So we took him to a lingerie shop, and the woman came over. She was very helpful. "What can I, you know, what can we get you? Oh, we're looking for something of a lacy number, something we want nice fishnets and a garter belt, you know, the very classic ornate sort of look." "Okay, and who's it for? Is it for your wife?" "Oh, no, it's for him." And we pushed Lukey forward and we had a ball, you know. She fitted him out with this awesome bright red suspenders and undies and...
the whole shebang.
And we got into the habit of when we do a performance, you know, Luke would always say, "Oh, are we singing Underpants? Because I've got the stuff." And we're like, "Oh, we're definitely singing that song." Say, "Oh, are we doing it in the first half or the second half?" "Oh, definitely the first half. Yeah, I think we'll finish the first half off with it." And so he'd get all his undies and put his G-string on and these very restrictive women's underpants that barely contained him. And he'd do the whole first half, and then we'd get to the end, we're like, "Yeah, okay, no, that's the end of the first half. We'll be back in a little bit." And then we'd get him to put it back on.
Did he not realise this was happening?
That's the thing about... I mean, he was so eager to please us as the new band member, and so he would have, you know...
He was happy to be the fall guy.
And that's probably bullying, Peachy, but it was good, clean fun. And, you know, all that happened was that he had to wear some... He wanted to wear them anyway, as it turns out. That's my story.
Dear.
That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Your band culture, we could talk about that too.
Wonderful. Oh, man. He's leaving us, unfortunately. He's moving to London in a few weeks. I'm going to, you know, find a career over there. Mm. Good on him.
Mm. And we never finished hearing about what's in your car. Sorry, I've got to come back to that.
What's in my car? So we've got the chewing gum. We talked with Mr. Numbers about the way I collect change.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was episode 2, if anyone's wants to go back and do some research.
Mm-hmm.
Silver, all my silver is in the centre console, so there's tons of that. A pair of sunglasses that I bought online, which are fantastic. Beautiful polarised lenses, lovely frames. They just don't look very good on me, but perfect dry, you know, perfect car sunnies. Beautiful. So they're always there.
I have a pair that I bought from Cotton On, which I keep in the car. Yeah. And I've never had a pair of glasses. I mean, admittedly, they were $5. Mm. But I've never had a pair of glasses which made me he looks so much like a strange owl before in my life. And that's the interesting thing about being in your car, isn't it? You feel like it's your own private little bubble, but actually other people could see me sitting there like a strange owl.
Yeah. I think that's all right, though. Like, you're not in your car to be cool.
Oh, you're
just trying
true.
To get somewhere.
It's very true. I did spend a small fortune tinting my windows about a year ago, and I have really – I'm very glad that I did it.
That's because you're a gangster, right?
Yeah, totally. It's about being a gangster. But it is so much cooler in my car because I have a dark-coloured car, which really, honestly, was just getting so – hot summer. I reckon it's the best, like, I think it was $250 or something like that, best bit of money I've ever spent. And also I can get into the car and be a bit less conscious of getting sunburned because I was constantly, my driving arm was just getting burnt to a tinder every time I was in there.
Yeah, I've been thinking of doing the same, and then I had this thought of like, oh, what would my dad say if I tinted the windows in my car? He'd be like,
oh, would he?
And then my brother put it in terms of just tell him it's going to save on air conditioning. It's an economical move. How much did it cost?
$250.
Oh,
yeah,
it's a bargain.
It's worth doing. And they come to your house and do it for you, and it's all done. And it takes about half an hour. It's not long.
I might do that because my car, it doesn't matter. I paid $1,200 to get the air conditioning fixed. And the air coming out's cold, but you're still boiling hot because the sun's cooking you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't have it on your windscreen, so you're still going to get plenty of, you know, sunlight in the car. It's not, that's not an issue. Yeah. But it's made a really big difference. I'm really glad I did it. It also means that you can sort of pash someone in the back seat without too many people checking you out, which is a good thing. If you're ever in that position.
Does that come in handy very often for you? Do you want to delve into that a bit further? Wonderful. The most important thing in my car is probably the iPhone cable. And look, you know,
thank God for the iPhone cable.
I saw a great little, you know, meme on the internet the other day, and it was like, car stereos in the 90s, and it was like, you know, they all had lights and flashing equalizers and you'd have your CD and your tape drive and your this and that. Nowadays, a CD player
and your
is
whole
a volume,
like CD wallet, you know, like the wallet with all of your favorite CDs
you have to
in
stack
there.
Them somewhere.
I still have a CD stacker, mind you.
Really?
My car, yep.
See, all I want is a volume knob, an auxiliary cable, and a USB. I mean, that's. That's everything.
Yep.
You've already paid for all your music on your device. Why would you want to, you know?
Redo it. It's true.
Other than that, look, in the I always have my...
You used to have like your whole cupboard in the back of your car. Like you would have your entire wardrobe in there. It was phenomenal.
Well, there was a time when I went out a lot, and generally when I went out for sort of 4 or 5 days at a time. So it would be... I'd pack my car with stuff so that I could stay out and, you know, party on. Those days are well behind me, mind you. I don't party on much anymore.
You keep your wardrobe in your wardrobe now, do you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
funny that.
That's a good place for it.
Funny that. Hey, look, we've well and truly gone over our hour.
Oh, we're so good at that.
Yeah, we just rabbit on about
shit. I know, it's true.
So what we'd like is for people to... Let us know about their, what are we talking about, our 5 songs. You don't have to give us 5 either. Just give us a reason why we should pick your song to take on the desert island. Even if just so that I can have a listen to that song and find out whether you're full of shit or not. that'd be cool.
Colonel, we're also going to chat before we finish up about the Colonel's challenge. Do we want people to maybe jump onto the... peachandthekernel.com to check out details of the
Absolutely.
Colonel's challenge. Yeah.
Look, here's the thing. I'm just into stuff, into lots of stuff. And I don't know, I find it hard. You get locked into the things that you do a lot. I'd like to try some other things. Now, whether it's like, you know, I get into like death metal for a week, or whether it's some wacky diet that I try for a month, or some exercise regime. If someone's got something that works for them and brings them joy, I want in. I want in. So what I'd really like is if Yeah, if people have some suggestions, I'm willing to give them a go and sort of report back on how they're going. Mm.
Challenge the Colonel. That's what we're looking for.
Challenge the Colonel. Mm. I'll see how I go. I obviously can't do all of them, but, you know, I'm...
We might select them at... What's the word I'm looking for? At not at random, but we might select them in a more considered manner.
Yeah. And look, it's not a thing
based on what's possible.
It's not a thing about trying to humiliate me, but I'm sure there'll be a bit of humiliation involved, undoubtedly. Yeah, I just want to try stuff. I want to enrich my life with some other shit. And cool. If people are up, if people have some ideas for me, I've got a willing and able body and somewhat able mind to give them a bash.
Cool. Okay.
Facebook page, facebook.com/Peach and the Colonel, all one word, lowercase. Peachandthekernel.com is our website, all lowercase, though I don't think that really matters. I'm not really sure. You can try it with random capitals if you want, but peachandthekernel.com.
That's where you need to be. So 5 songs on a desert island, any challenges you want for the Colonel, tell us what's in your car and how you use it.
Mm.
And also if you maybe have some suggestions for some cool interactive activities or like sessions we could go to that are similar to a cool sort of IRL shooter experience, give us your hot tips. We'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. Once again, thanks for downloading the podcast and getting involved with Peach and the Colonel. It means so much to us that someone else out there really gives two shits enough to listen to us dribble on with our shit. We really enjoy it and we hope you do too. Much love to everyone. Please stay in touch and let us know what shit you'd like us to dribble next time. See you later, Peach.
See you later, Colonel.
Take care, everyone. Bye.